Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That Podcast, show number. Do you know what number it is?
No.
It's number 63.
Oh, I was going to say 61. Okay.
I know it probably seems like show 150 to all you audience members out there. They're just sick of us. But you can't be too sick of us because it's been like...
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
Since you've been sick of us.
Since you've been sick of us. Our phone number, if you'd like to call and make a comment, because I always forget to say this phone number off the top, is 206-333-1003. That number again, 206-333-1003. Of course, you can also go to our website where the number is prominently displayed. But nobody ever calls and gives us comments that we can play on the air, so I don't know why I bother.
But we do get emails.
Yeah, even that are not as often.
Well, maybe if we did a podcast more often.
We still have, we still have, according to Libsyn, something like 300 to 400, sometimes 500 listeners. But I don't know if they're just downloads and people not listening, or actually listeners and, you know, they're just listening and not commenting, which is fine. We don't mind that.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
In fact, I don't want to be bothered with too many comments. I remember when the show was new and Pat and I were doing it. When we started getting really popular, we started getting lots of comments, and a lot of them were not so nice. And I just thought, you know,
I don't need this.
We're just two amateur hacks in front of a microphone. What's the point of being so critical? We're not trying to be like radio people and make money, you know?
We were just trying to entertain.
We're just trying to entertain.
And I think we are, too.
I think we are, too. Yeah. Well, I know I am. I don't know what you're doing.
I try to find the obscure and unusual.
No, you're a great entertainer. So the big news today is, Tuesday? And I'll probably get this hopefully will get out by the weekend. But the big news in the news right now is Elliot Spitzer.
Yes.
And I can't help it. I just find so many things about it funny. Lots of levels. First of all, you know, the whole political aspect of it. It just drives me nuts. You know, the Republicans are calling for his head, Republican people, and Democrats are a little bit nicer. And I'm thinking, why can't there just be one standard? Why does it have to be so political? It's either wrong or right for an elected official to have solicited a prostitute. And we just need to say that's either acceptable or not acceptable and move on. It should not be political in my mind, you know? So I find that funny. The other thing I kind of find funny, and this is sad, I know, but... why do they always trot the wife up there?
Standing by her man. Yeah.
It's such a beating.
You see, Jim McGreevy's ex-wife is making the talk show rounds now.
Oh,
she
no.
She stood by him 4 years ago when he came out as being the gay American.
Right.
Remember? And, you know, she had a child and she stood by him.
Right.
And I heard her say that she wasn't really given much of a choice. He met with advisors for 2 days to figure out what to do. And then they came and said... he's going to make an announcement, and you're going to stand by him.
That doesn't surprise me. Everything about this Elliot Spitzer thing seems just totally canned. I mean, here's his comments. I have disappointed and failed to live up to the standard I expected of myself. I must now dedicate some time to regain the trust of my family. I have acted in a way that violates my obligations to my family and violates my or any sense of right and wrong. I apologize first and foremost, and more importantly to my family, I apologize to the public whom I promised better. I mean, it's all nice and everything, but it just sounds like somebody wrote a speech.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a speech.
Mm-hmm.
If he really
didn't really mention what he did.
If he really thought it was wrong, he wouldn't have done it. So he really kind of doesn't think it's not wrong.
And he's looking at a felony here for transporting a prostitute across state lines. And he, of all people, should know that. If you're going to get one, why move her across state lines?
They don't have any hotties in D.C.
I know,
he's
really
got to get her from New York. I don't get that part at all. I gotta
admit.
That was
unbelievable. He had to bring her down from New York.
I can't believe that. And, yeah. and that's the worst violation is the interstate commerce aspect of it. And he is absolutely in a position to know that.
And when I lived in New York, I mean, he was really hated. I mean, he went after all of Wall Street. He was definitely known for being ruthless and for being righteous. And, you know, just his reputation, he's not well liked. And then all of a sudden you can see he doesn't have a whole lot of people coming to his support to say, oh, let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
You don't get the benefit of the doubt when you've got political enemies.
They must have his voice on a recording. They must absolutely have something that's so foolproof.
They said they have him on wiretape.
It's airtight.
Yeah,
then.
It's airtight.
Wow.
The other thing I thought was funny, when it first came out, I got the CNN breaking news. Mm-hmm. And here's the things that it said.
Did you think he was going to resign? Because that's what all the reporters who were at the conference said, that they thought the next sentence was going to be, and you're going to resign, right?
Oh, really?
I think he will resign.
I think he will. Mm-hmm. But now here's what they said. It said, Elliot Spitzer caught or involved in a prostitution ring. And then another headline was, requested things that may be considered dangerous. I mean, to the women. And so you're thinking, oh my God, this is big. He was caught in a prostitution ring. My first thought was he was heading up a prostitution ring. You know, it turns out he just got a call girl. I mean, I don't want to de-emphasize
that. But you know, it wasn't that long ago. It was February 13th, which is what's pretty amazing about that. I mean, I thought maybe this was years ago.
Right.
But no, it was a couple weeks ago. They caught him with his pants down.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
But the news made it sound so much worse at first blush. He's caught in the middle of a prostitution ring. Doesn't that sound like he's some big... you know,
financier
of the prostitution ring.
He's client number 9. Actually.
And he was client number 9. And then they said he requested things that may be considered. The dispatcher to the prostitution service told one of the girls he often requests things that may be considered dangerous to a woman. And again, the red lights go on. Oh my God, how kinky is this guy? What's going on here? And then comes to find out. And again, I'm not de-emphasizing it, but it's somehow not as radical. He preferred sex without a condom, which of course is dangerous in that field. But it's not like the implication, which was he likes to tie and cut and
asphyxiate.
You know, all kinds of asphyxiate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly.
Interesting. Well, we'll probably hear all the gory details in her book, which will probably be out in 2 years.
Yeah.
Or maybe she'll rush it to the newsstands while, you know, he's going up for a trial.
Right. So, no, I don't think there's any doubt that he'll resign. I think he has to. I don't really think the crime justifies that much, to be honest with you. I don't think it's a felony. I think it's, well, maybe the interstate thing, but getting a prostitute itself is probably more of a misdemeanor. But it's the fact that it's him. He's in charge. He's the governor of a state.
He's the attorney general who prosecuted stood for righteousness. And
he really has no choice.
And he has 3 teenage daughters, which is really pretty awful.
Right.
And this wife of 20-some years.
Right, yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he has to resign. I think probably he's doing the right thing, probably getting the blind black guy all prepared, which is... Isn't that funny? The first black governor in New York and the first blind governor anywhere. So we'll see what happens there, but he won't. Bump, bump. Let the jokes begin.
Oh, my God. Talk about entertaining.
And the other big thing in the news, I guess, is the Obama-Clinton stuff, right?
Yes. You know, the last time we had a podcast, Romney was still in the race.
Yeah. Boy, that was a long time ago.
So much has happened, hasn't it?
So much has happened. And I'll tell you, the hurricane blew into Texas, didn't it?
Yeah.
I'm glad it's gone.
Did you caucus?
I didn't caucus because I had plans that night, but I really kind of wanted to. But after reading about it, I'm glad I didn't. It sounds like a real cluster F.
All my friends had totally different experiences. I think it just depended on who was running the precinct.
Right.
Whether it went smoothly or whether it was a complete debacle.
Right.
Or, you know, the one precinct in, Arlington that had 5,000 people turn out, and they totally were not prepared for that.
Right.
And
like I heard one, this was in the paper, effect is right over here, the Lakewood Library. They had a bunch of people waiting in line, and this one woman was on her way to Whole Foods to get some food, and she said, well, I guess I'll stop by and caucus. And she asked some people and said, oh, we're waiting for the precinct leader. And it's like, well, she went up to the front of the line and said, who's the precinct leader? And it was her. She had no idea. She wasn't prepared to do anything, so she got the people. And this is what's funny: she got the people in. She started marking down Democrat, Republican. She apparently
all Democrats.
I'm sorry, all Democrats. Yeah, Obama or Clinton. I'm sorry. Right. And apparently this woman is probably, you know, pretty savvy and kind of figured it out on the fly. But they had representatives there from Obama and Clinton. And since she was doing things so informally, their representative said, listen, you got to stop this. We're going to call our lawyers. And I kind of admire this woman. This woman just said, look, call your lawyers. What are we going to do? Why don't you guys just help me facilitate the vote and make sure everything is done is right? If you want to call the lawyers, we're going to delay this thing by hours and hours. And the Obama and Clinton people just ended up, sucking it up and doing it. So all over the state, there was a lot of informal stuff going on. I don't think it benefited either candidate, really, the fact that it was so unorganized, except Obama just gets more people to get excited about the caucuses. So he tends to do well on those, but...
What a silly system Texas has. Why you had to go vote twice? Beyond me.
Well, and then it raises the question, which I've never really had to think about too much, is I don't really understand why we have caucuses in the first place. It does seem, one of the people on the Meet the Press was saying, it's kind of undemocratic. It doesn't really allow people to vote because it doesn't allow absentee voters. So you've got old people, you've got people that are shift working. Mm-hmm. They can't get in and vote. I think they're kind of right about that. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Or people who didn't have childcare.
Right. So I'm not sure if the whole caucus thing is kind of in doubt now. I mean, mm-hmm. Maybe they should just go with primaries.
And today's Mississippi. Yeah,
today's Mississippi.
Is that a caucus or is that a vote?
I think it's a vote.
I think it's a vote.
Mm. And that'll go to Obama. You know, Obama wins all the little states and Clinton seems to win the big ones. Yeah. But here's my conclusion on the race. I really think the people have spoken. You know, it's so tied.
Are speaking. Let's not forget those 12 states that haven't voted yet.
No, they're speaking. But and I think the overall result is they like both of them. Mm-hmm. No one is a clear advantage. And here's what I think they should do. You know, there's all this discussion, should we allow Florida and Michigan, and is going to depend on the superdelegates, or is it going to go purely by delegate count? Here's what I feel they should do. And again, I got a little bit of the seed of this idea from Meet the Press, but they were saying that on both camps, they can run computer, their demographics are so solid on both sides mm-hmm. that they can run computer simulations and really predict the outcome in all of these states.
Because it's splitting down party. It's splitting down demographic lines now.
Very solidly, mm-hmm. these demographic lines. And so I really think the superdelegates should get together and use all that data and say what is, and then, you know, use computer simulations about that versus what McCain gets mm-hmm. and pick the candidate that's going to beat McCain or has the best probability. I think the only negative to that is voters could say, hey, well, you're disenfranchising me because you're not listening to how I voted in a primary. Mm-hmm. And my rebuttal to that is no. All the data we're using is your vote. That's how we're coming up with the best candidate, by using your vote, by the fact that you went out and voted in your primaries and caucuses. Mm. We're using that information to come up with this data to help us make the best choice. To me, I don't know. I just think that's the best way to do it, because I would hate to see the candidate.
It sounds a little sophisticated for a Democratic Party that actually said no to Florida and Michigan and slapped their little hands and said, no, you aren't going to count at all.
Think
that it wasn't going to be relevant. And everybody agreed. Everybody held hands and signed on and agreed. And now nobody can agree.
You kind of wonder why, if you go back, slip the time back 9 months, why they agreed to that in the first place, you know?
Because Clinton was supposed to have it all wrapped up.
Yeah.
And those two weren't supposed to really have had an outcome. An effect.
So did you vote and did you caucus?
I voted, but I didn't caucus.
Yeah,
I knew I would have to work. I had to work late.
Yeah.
So.
Did you do pre-vote or did you vote on the day?
I voted on the day.
Okay.
I was number 70 and it was quick.
I did the early vote and it was pretty fast. And you know.
What is odd here in the state is that they don't mail a sample ballot and they don't make the candidate statements. They definitely do that in other states where I've lived.
What do you mean?
You actually, like in California, you get an actual sample ballot. It shows you what it's going to look like. And then in your little booklet, it's a statement from each candidate. And remember, most of our ballots had to do with local,
yes.
local races. How much did you know about the local races?
You know what? I made a mental note to kind of prepare myself and at least read the Dallas Morning News
summary
recommendations
of them?
And summaries, and I didn't do it, so I didn't vote for him.
You didn't? Okay, well, that's probably one way. But I mean, the presidential race was one question, and then the rest of the other 25 or 30 positions were all local,
right?
And the railroad commissioner. I mean, come on. I didn't realize it was such, and I still to this day don't know who won. So I do feel kind of bad that I wasn't prepared for that. And heck, I follow the news and I do get the morning news on weekends. And yet I didn't know. So I'm thinking, if I'm not an informed voter, who else is going to be all that informed?
If you and I aren't informed on the local stuff, who is?
Who is?
The few activist people. There was one gentleman in my early voting, even. He was out there promoting some guy for a local office that was his brother.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know?
Maybe that.
And I tried to look for a last name, and I thought, oh, what the heck?
Yeah. Okay. Caught his brother at her. So it definitely seemed like I wasn't as informed as I could have been, but I'm not sure that the process here doesn't disallow you to be. I mean, they don't do anything to help you. You even have to go online to find where your polling place is. It's not even written on your little card that they mail you where
That's
you have
a good
to go.
Point.
Nothing is easy.
You
it
make
requires
good points.
Lots of different steps here.
Yeah.
But in other states they make it really easy. I mean, I've taken that sample ballot to the poll before, and I just remember I've checked off this person, I've read their statement, I like what they said, this is what they stood for. And everybody has equal space and equal amount of words, and I just thought it was very helpful, and it's much harder here. So.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And if you and I can't, you know, I didn't even realize until probably 4 days before the vote that we had to vote twice.
I know, a lot of people were so confused.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people were confused.
And
there was
again,
so much confusion.
I think I'm pretty informed.
And it wasn't clear that it was just Democrats and the Republicans were
right.
doing it the normal way, and it was just for Democrats.
Right.
It was very, very confusing. But
I am disappointed in the result. Not so much favoring one candidate or the other, although I have my preferences, and I'm sure you do too. I just, the fact that they're landlocked and the fact that Hillary kind of got back into it by sort of being attacky means that they're both going to be attacky for the next two months.
And that's so annoying.
I hate it. It just beats me down. It was kind of
so annoying.
It's kind of like, what's the term in the TV show it jumped the shark. You ever heard that term?
Uh-uh.
It's from Happy Days, when Happy Days was a very popular
uh-huh.
sitcom.
Uh-huh.
And they had one episode when it finally started getting bad, that they all went to Hawaii and Fonzie was surfing over sharks. He jumped the shark.
Oh.
And it's become a television term now. And his show has lost its goodness. It's called It's Jump the Shark.
Okay.
So to me, this campaign is Jump the Shark.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe because it was, like I said, the whirlwind kind of came to Texas. We were inundated for a while.
Right.
And glad that it's gone.
Uh-huh.
I just hate the bickering.
I know.
I just hate it.
Yeah. Yeah. I voted to stop the bickering, but
it
didn't work.
So. Yeah, I did too.
So we continue to bicker.
Yeah.
Hey, and we also, you know what happened on Sunday? Remember the little time change?
Yes, I do. I do. I lost an hour, thank you.
Yeah, weren't you tired yesterday? I was tired yesterday.
I know. Oh, I had trouble getting up in the morning.
I was tired. Yeah, it was really hard this morning.
Yeah.
So on Sunday, everybody knows, the whole country did, right? There's no states that are exempt, or there are still a few that are exempt.
Well, I think
those
Arizona.
Areas, like some
in Indiana,
part of Indiana. Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay. Well, if you're in those states, don't listen to this.
Close your ears.
Okay. So 90 years ago, Sidney Colgate of Colgate-Palmolive and Lincoln Filene of Filene's Basement supported daylight savings time, theorizing that the extra hour of daylight would benefit their businesses.
Hmm.
And actually, some businesses benefit from daylight savings and some don't.
I'm sure that's true.
Here, I'll give you a quiz. You tell me what you think.
Okay.
Sporting goods business. Do you think it's a winner or a loser?
I would say it's a winner.
It is a winner.
Yeah, because people have time to leisure
right.
after work.
Convenience stores. Winner or loser?
Ooh, boy. I would say a loser, my guess is, because when it's light outside, people have a tendency to go to the real grocery store versus just making a quick stop when it's dark outside. It's probably completely wrong.
So. Yeah, they say they're a winner because people hang out and enjoy the extra hour of daylight by having a picnic or sharing a six-pack.
Okay.
And they will go to a convenience store, and probably a grocery store, too. But
the
convenience store did win.
That makes sense.
Here's an odd one. Candy. Is the candy industry a winner or a loser?
No, I wouldn't have thought it would make a difference, you know, but kids after school hanging out and eating candy, I don't know, man.
Think about when it ends.
Oh, it ends right before Halloween.
Not anymore.
It runs after
Halloween
now. Okay.
Yeah, it ends. The Energy Act of 2005 pushed it into November.
That's right, beginning of November.
Leaving an extra hour intact for Halloween, and this was largely believed to be caused by the lobbyists for the Candy Association.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? Candy's a winner.
Wow.
Okay, TV networks, winner or loser?
Gotta say loser, because I would think that when it's light outside, people tend to get out more and not in front of the TV.
Yeah, they say that primetime slots right after the hour happens definitely take a beating. But then again, they're not so sure whether it has to do with a higher likelihood of reruns in the summer, too.
Right, right. You always have that.
Maybe, yeah.
But now it starts so early, you know, beginning of March.
Right, that you are not into reruns yet.
And did you see, just not to get off this topic, but did you see where NBC just made an announcement that said, we're not going to do the season stuff anymore. No summer reruns. We're going to intersperse reruns and shows all year long.
Oh. Let's see if that helps.
Which in today's TiVo generation probably makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about golf? Is that a winner or a loser?
It's got to be a winner, right? I mean, you can't play golf when it's dark.
That's true, but those early morning folks can't golf either. So it's a winner or loser situation.
Okay.
People after work can do it, but the more retired enthusiasts who play early in the morning lose out because they've lost their hour in the morning.
Interesting. Now, I heard an economist on NPR. Economist.
An economist.
It's like e-learning. An economist on NPR talking about the fact that the reason they extended these things supposedly is to save energy. And he came up with a bunch of reasons that I don't remember about why. And that's not true. In some cases, it saves money. And in some cases, that's offset by costing higher, more energy money.
Right.
But he said the one thing that you can't exactly measure, but they've tried to measure, and they believe it's absolutely positive, is the social aspects of daylight savings time, because people tend to hang out outside on their front porch, mingle with the neighbors a little bit more. Huh. So overall, economists say it's a good thing.
Which
is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. And retail, too, says the same thing. In general, people, especially outdoor malls, they see more people spending.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So what else do you have?
Well, it's been a while. I went on a ski trip.
Oh, that's, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I got, it was fun, but...
this is the one where you went with people you didn't know.
I went with a group called Lynx, and it was a group of people that I didn't know. Now, the deal to Jackson Hole was a really good deal, so I thought, well, because I've tried to arrange ski trips in the past, and just things happen, you know, and it's expensive, so I thought I'd try it and see how I liked it. Mm-hmm. So the results are in. And first of all, the trip was kind of funny because we ended up getting delayed in Jackson Hole by 3 days unintentionally because of bad snowstorms, which always kind of sucks. But I stayed in a place with six people. And I had my own bedroom and everything. So that was pretty sweet. I really wasn't supposed to get that. But everybody was friendly, but everybody sort of had their friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really felt like, you know, this is a great vacation.
Right.
And the skiing, because it was so snowy, wasn't super. But so the conclusion I made out of it, though, is this stuff is definitely worthwhile from a financial standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And good to have other people kind of organizing things and helping out and have people around for happy hours. But next time, bring friends.
You're going with somebody you know.
So take advantage of the deal, but still have people that you know.
Go with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And again, people weren't unfriendly. They just tended to want to hang out with their
people they knew.
With their people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
I wasn't exactly excluded, but, you know. But nevertheless, so that was a good trip, and hopefully I'm going to be doing some scuba diving in May sometime. I haven't been scuba diving in 15 years. I'm going to get a recertification, and I've got some friends that are getting certified out in Cozumel.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I talked to the dive instructor, and he said, yeah, come along. We can do the recert here in Dallas before we leave, and then you'll be good to go.
Wow, that sounds fun.
And I said, really? Good to go? And it's not, scuba diving is not that hard or anything, but, you know, I just don't remember anything. Although the hardest part about it was to do all your charting and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Now they still teach that, but now apparently you don't do it at all. You have a dive computer.
Oh.
You just sit there. And it's great because I remember the old charts. You used to figure out, okay, we're going to go down to 60 foot on this dive.
Right.
You do your little calculation, and you figure out how much time you have.
Right.
Well, you're never at 60 foot the whole time, of course. That's just your deepest.
Right.
So the time down in the water was always worst case.
Uh-huh.
You had to get out sooner. So the dive computer allows you to dive a lot longer.
Oh. More accurate.
It's more accurate. So it's pretty cool.
Fun.
So
fun.
That should be fun. And the last weekend I went to the North Texas Irish Festival.
Okay. I'm having trouble visualizing this, but okay.
That was fun.
Was it?
Yes, and I almost bought a kilt.
Had some green beer.
What do you think of men in kilts?
I've Dated several of them.
Okay, now this was, these kilts.
Kilts were, are amazing.
These are called utila kilts. These no. were these were not the fancy Scottish plaid kilts.
Okay, the ones with 30 yards of wool.
Right.
That cost like $600-$800.
Right. Mm-hmm. These were not them. These were still pretty pricey, $150, but they were more for casual wear. Just and
were they wool?
No, they were something you could wash.
Oh.
And the sell essentially was these are more comfortable than shorts. You know, and I don't know.
Did you try one?
Yeah, I tried one on.
Oh.
And, you know, all the women there were saying, ooh, you look good in a kilt. Which, you know, part of them were salespeople. So, I don't know. Do you think men look good in kilts? I don't know why they would. Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's another one.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Sarah, I'm gonna have to get me a kilt for this summer. I just don't know if I'd probably just wear it around the house, though. I don't know if I'd wear it out. Again, it's not a dressy kilt or anything.
Right.
So, you'd almost do a second... You know, a double take. If you saw me walking down the street in a kilt, it wouldn't immediately strike your attention.
However, you can wear it this Monday, and nobody would ever bat an eye, because last St. Patrick's Day,
yeah,
or whenever last I was ever here celebrating, there were guys who were wearing them, and they got a lot of attention.
Yeah, I should have bought one. I should have bought a fancy one for that. Get some attention.
From
the ladies.
From the ladies. Yeah, there you go.
I don't get no attention from the ladies, Gretchen. You getting attention from the men?
Sometimes.
Let's embarrass Gretchen.
Oh, so you know what's coming up on 8808?
A lot of eights.
A lot of eights, yeah. You know what it is? The big number?
Okay, no.
The Beijing Olympics open.
Really?
And you know what those innovative Chinese are going to do? For the first
Tell
time
me.
Ever, guess what they're going to do? The 2008 Summer Olympics are going to be, they're going to actually, the Chinese officials are going to try to control the weather. They're going to manipulate the area around the 100,000 seat Olympic stadium because the Olympics are opening smack dab in the middle of the rainy season in China. And when we're talking about rainy season in China, it rains.
So how are they going to manipulate the weather?
Well, what they do is they blast into the clouds exploding shells that release particles of silver iodide, a compound used in photography.
Oh my gosh. It breaks
up the water droplets into smaller sizes that are less likely to fall. Or they can induce the rain before the event, which might wash away the smog and the dust.
You're kidding.
Yeah, so the games were originally going to start on July 25th, but now they're starting on August 8th, partially because 8808 is a lucky number for the Chinese. But the chances of rain are 50%. So the Bureau of Weather Modification, which was established in the 1980s, is the largest in the world. It has a reserve army of 37,000 people. It has 30 aircraft, 4,000 rocket launchers, and 7,000 anti-aircraft guns, all
oh
for shooting
gosh.
These pellets into the air.
Really?
Yep. So they're going to try to make sure that it doesn't rain on their parade.
That is going to be
isn't
wild
that amazing?
To see if it works.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Wow.
Yeah. See? Unusual and entertaining here.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about sex real fast?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. I've got a sex story, too.
Okay, good. I think I got a couple of them. This is interesting, actually. This is just amazing. I find this stuff hard to believe, but in 1996, the average American had sex 138 times a year. Now, in 2007, this is what, 10 years later or so, people have reported to have sex just 88 times. That's a 38% decrease in a little bit more than a decade.
Wow.
Furthermore, psychologists estimate that as many as 1 in 5 couples are in a sexless marriage, which means sex less than 10 times a year. Our sex drive is in a deep drive. Now, they come up with one big culprit for this. You know what it is?
Lack of time, no energy.
That's those are lack of time and low and no energy are definitely in there. But they said the number one reason is obesity. As a person's weight soars, their libido plummets due to biochemical changes that result in diminished blood flow. There's simply no sex without strong blood flow. And even when Americans do manage to have sex, the extra weight they're bringing to the bedroom hinders their ability to have. To have children with men. It's damaged sperm with women. It's ovulation problems. Well, I don't know what that has to do with sex.
No, I think they're saying with obesity.
Yeah, with obesity. Okay.
With obesity.
So how about that?
That is unbelievably shocking. I had no idea that, I mean, we talk about obesity and all the other bad side effects, the diabetes and the heart disease
right.
and all the other things, and now it takes away from your sex drive.
So obesity, people who are a little bit, or I shouldn't say,
obesity is really bad.
Yeah, really bad.
Yeah.
People who are obese are less horny. I guess that's what I read from this thing. And wow. And we keep getting fatter and fatter and less horny. We're going to have less and less children.
Well, you want to hear my alarming sex story?
Yeah.
1 in 4 teen girls in the United States has an STD.
Wow.
Teen girls, 1 in 4.
Wow.
That's 3 million teens in the first study of its kind.
So if 1 in 4 have STDs, how many in four are doing it?
About half of the girls acknowledged ever having sex. And among those girls, the rate was 40%. Some teens define sex as only intercourse, but other types of intimate behavior, including oral sex, can spread the infections.
Right.
The virus that causes cervical cancer is by far the most commonly transmitted disease in girls age 14 to 19, and the overall highest prevalence is in black girls.
Really?
Nearly half of the black teen girls have at least one STD. It's really unbelievable that these girls are so at risk. And
we're
talking about HPV, chlamydia, trichomoniasis, and herpes simplex.
My God.
Yeah. Pretty bad.
Why aren't the lessons of, all our sex education lessons working?
I'm not sure they're necessarily targeting girls this young, and especially black girls. So the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, is recommending annual chlamydia screenings for all sexually active girls under 25. Oh, that's sad.
Well, heck, even if you're above 25, it doesn't hurt to have the screening.
Yeah, really.
If you're sexually active.
It can cause infertility and cervical cancer in women.
Of course, by 25, I understand why they wouldn't want to do the screening anymore, because they're obese and they're not having sex. Wow.
Yeah, pretty sad.
Pretty sad state of sex on this show. We need to spice it up.
Do you have a better sex story?
No, I don't think I do.
Maybe there's next week.
Listeners out there, send us
a good sex story.
Let us know you're having good sex so we don't get so depressed here. This country needs to have sex and kids.
Oh, I did read about a woman who has a sex podcast. Sex Ed podcast. Is Frank Bud funny?
There's a lot of sex podcasts. The only one I listen to...
This one is about teens, though. This is a teen sex show. Mm-hmm.
I listen to Dan Savage's Savage Love, by the way, and that's a great, I really like that one.
Yeah.
He's really good.
He's a syndicated columnist.
Yes, he is. Uh-huh. He is.
Yeah.
And I really like it.
Yeah, he's fun.
But that's the only, there's a lot of sex podcasts, and apparently that's a pretty popular, in fact, starting next show, we're going to be a sex podcast.
Are we now? I'll have to put away some of my stories that I find really interesting to devote them all to sex.
So. No, we couldn't compete with all the sex podcasts out there. I've only listened to the one. I don't really, you know, who has time, right? But. So anyway, this guy, Mark Weiner, talking about sex, but I'm bump.
It's probably Weiner.
Weiner, I know, but fitting
Weiner
with the mood.
Sounds better.
Yeah. He was an NPR foreign correspondent, and he said he's just a naturally depressed kind of guy. So he said he set out through the world to find where is the best place. Where is the happiest country? What's the best place?
Happy countries, yeah. We've talked about that before.
Happy countries. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't remember this result. His book is called The Geography of Bliss.
Okay.
One Grump's Search for the Happiest Place in the World.
Okay.
So basically, he comes down to the conclusion that the rich countries and the beautiful tropical islands and everything, that's not it. It all comes down to countries that have... The people that he reported are the happiest are people that are countries that have a lot of personal relationships. Let me see here. The number one country he said was Bhutan. Also big and high in these countries were, second was Iceland, and also up there were Thailand, India, and Switzerland. India kind of surprised me a little bit, you know?
Who do you talk to in India?
Yeah, I don't know. He said Bhutan is probably the closest thing on earth to Shangri-La. That fictional paradise. He pointed out that while other countries focus on their gross domestic product, the Himalayan kingdom proudly touts its policy of gross national happiness.
All right.
The Bhutanese very much believe that happiness should be part and parcel of every government decision. How about that?
Uh-huh.
Thousands of miles away, Weiner found happiness in a very different environment, marveling at the creativity and coziness of Iceland. He said, everyone in Iceland is a poet. He visited the country during winter and said he found a certain beauty in the cold and the darkness. Such a chilly climate usually encourages warm relationship, he found. And let's see, this article goes on here. Sorry about that. The cold inspires people to cooperate traditionally. If you go back a few hundred years, people in cold climates have to cooperate or they die together.
That's
true. It's that simple. So anyways, I won't go through the rest of that. But I thought that was kind of interesting, a little bit counterintuitive than what you would have thought. He went to places like Qatar, which is not guitar, but Qatar.
Sometimes
not,
like gutter.
Not the stringed instrument. Yeah, cutter.
Cutter, yeah.
Actually, maybe it's cutter.
Yeah, it's cutter.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Not the knife, but the country.
The country. Q-U-T-A-R.
Where they have no worries and everyone's a millionaire.
Yeah.
And he said people aren't really all that happy there. Huh. So.
Well, they do live in the desert. Maybe that's why.
Yeah. That's
probably. maybe that's it.
That wouldn't help. Yeah.
Speaking of the desert, did you hear the latest estimate by these two pretty famous economists that the Iraq war, now in its sixth year, is costing $12 billion a month?
Yes.
Triple the burn rate of the earlier years? Triple the burn rate. $12 billion a month. I'm having such a hard time grasping that.
I just can't believe that we as a country want to continue that.
Look
at all the things that we could do with that money.
I know.
And is there any surprise that the economy is in the tank right now?
Right.
I mean, I don't know the connection. I'm not a smart enough economist to know. But something told me 2 years ago when we started sucking all this money into this foreign land that this is going to wreak havoc on our economy. And I'm not claiming to be prophetic. I could be wrong for the wrong reasons, or I could be right for the wrong reasons.
This is a record deficit. And look at what the deficit is. And remember, just 8 years ago, there was a surplus. So now there's a deficit. So their book is called The $3 Trillion War. And the two wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, have cost the U.S. budget $845 billion. And that just counts military operations and embassy costs and reconstruction and other war-related expenses. That far surpasses $670 billion spent for the whole 12-year Vietnam War.
Wow.
And even though Iraqi and American military casualty rates have declined, the rate of spending, which this is what shocks me, the rate of spending has shot up. So deaths are going down, but the rate of spending is going up. And it's going to be, in 2008, 155% higher than it was in 2004. The reasons are numerous. The surge of additional U.S. units into Iraq, the rising fuel costs, fattened bonuses, this is what you never hear about, to attract reenlistments, and particularly the need to reset, which is repairing and replacing worn-out and damaged military equipment. And this
I heard also that they're paying the enemy to some extent to bribe them not to fight.
Heard that. Right. And then we also have all the
Blackwater. I think it is Blackwater.
Blackwater troops that are not officially on the payroll, but they are on the payroll.
Right.
And there's 150,000 of those. So it's very disturbing news that anybody with kids, hey, tell your kids they're going to be paying for it.
I know.
Very sad.
That is. Hey, did you watch the Grammys?
Yeah, I watched some of them.
Yeah, TiVo'd it, so I watched the musical performances. I thought it was amazing that afterwards Aretha Franklin was really miffed when Beyonce referred to Tina Turner as the queen.
Right.
Apparently she was really, really upset. She had a press release the Tuesday after objecting to her Beyonce's queen quip. I'm not sure of whose toes I may have stepped on or whose ego I may have bruised between the Grammy and the Beyonce, but however, I dismiss it as a cheap shot for controversy. In addition to that, I thank the Grammys and the Voting Academy for my 20th Grammy and love to Beyonce anyways. But do you really think Beyonce was trying to diss Aretha? Aretha's kind of the biggest has-been. Anyway, I just thought that was really funny. But I enjoyed the Grammys, and I'll tell you, the reason I tuned in is because I read someplace that Kid Rock and Keeley Smith were going to perform that old Black Magic, which is an old Keeley Smith and Louis Primo song from the 50s, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And Keeley's still around, and I really wanted to see her. And it wasn't a great performance. They actually, you probably don't remember, actually missed their cue a couple times, and the timing was a little bit off, but it was fun. Kid Rock was very gracious, and Keeley was a little bit off, but you know, she was great to see again. It was really fun. But I really loved Amy Winehouse, and I loved the performance so much I bought both of her CDs that she has out now, and it's just some of the greatest music. I absolutely love it, and I hope she doesn't die young. Apparently last week she was caught showing off how she could drink gin through her nose. So
rehab isn't working then.
She said no.
No to rehab.
I don't know. You know, here's the deal, though, Gretchen. This is a woman, I read a little bit about her, because I think she's immensely talented. But I read about her, and she's essentially been a druggy alcoholic. I shouldn't say alcoholic, but drinking and doing drugs since age of 14. In other words, she's never known as an adult being sober.
Mm-hmm.
So what must that be like? What demons must you have to try to be sober? It's, you know, but I'm enjoying her while she's around. And I recommend, have you heard her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like her?
She's got an amazing voice. Interesting voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have two big Dallas companies in the news.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I guess Southwest isn't technically from Dallas, right? Oh, yeah, it is.
It's considered Dallas, yeah.
Yeah, Dallas-based. Well, you've heard that Southwest is facing the record FAA fine, right, of $10.2 million for flying planes that they knowingly knew needed to be inspected for structural damage, and they did not.
That news shocked me more than Elliot Spitzer, because Southwest has always been this really well-run airline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Southwest was told that they had to inspect their flight, their fleet. And when they belatedly conducted the inspections, it found cracks in the bodies of six Boeing 737s, with the largest measuring 4 inches. And cracks can depressurize an aircraft and cause it to rip apart.
Right.
They said
which would really suck on their way to Houston.
Said they would. I know, and I'm on it to San Antonio.
Yeah.
So they said that they're going to challenge the fine. And they blew the whistle on themselves in mid-March 2007. They realized they had not checked some of the jets. And so they said, hey, look, this is what we did. Although it's really a long, complicated story that goes on. There's allegations that they got too tight with the FAA. They were supposed to police themselves. They didn't. Certain FAA inspectors brought it up to their powers that be, and they said, oh, don't point this out. So and now they're going to go before Congress, and there's going to be hearings.
But so does it kind of sound like maybe these problems were known, but maybe there's kind of like an informal relationship that had sort of was building up between the enforcer and the enforcee, and they sort of said, we're going to get this fixed.
Actually, it's under FAA regulations that airlines police some aspects of safety themselves, an approach that is supposed to result in more information being shared.
Okay.
So that is where they're saying that maybe this isn't working so well.
Got it.
That to ask them to police themselves. The FAA didn't address why its field staff didn't immediately ground Southwest's jets after the carrier reported the violations on March 15th.
Right.
So they should have said right then and there, stop flying them.
Right.
So they've now recommended the largest penalty, $10 million for 1,400 flights by 38 jets that were operated after the airline knew the planes had to be checked, and $200,000 for missing the deadline to inspect 46 jets for fatigue cracks.
Wow.
So anyhow, it's kind of messy, but they are going to fight it. And then, at the same time, you know who else is in the news is American's planes.
Do
you know what the average age of American's planes are? You used to work for them.
I don't know. It's been a while. Back when I was there, we were buying new planes. When I was in management, we ran a tight ship.
Well, every day that American flies now, its aging McDonnell Douglas MD-80 is another day that it burns 20 to 30% more fuel than it could use with today's replacement Boeing 737. From a purely operational point of view, Americans should be replacing those planes because of fuel emissions, noise, and maintenance.
All right. Now, I disagree with that. And the reason I disagree with that, you know, not just being in the airline business, but just if it was a better deal for American, they would do it in a heartbeat. Well, it's a no-brainer. It's all business.
No, the problem is that the new ones that are coming out are coming at a really bad time for them. They're coming like in 7 years, and they're not sure what to do now. So they're continuing to fly with these antique ones.
Yeah.
But the average age of their fleet is 15 years.
Yeah.
Which is really pretty old. The oldest fleet in business right now is Northwest. It's 17 and a half years. And the youngest fleet is JetBlue at 3 years. So everybody else is in between there. But that American has the second oldest fleet. The airlines on order are just a fraction of the jets it needs to replace 300 MD-80s, the oldest of which started to fly in 1983. The MD-80 fleet average is 18 years old. So they want to wait for the replacements from the next generation of Boeings, which are going to be even more fuel efficient, but they don't think they can afford to wait. But then again, you know.
Yeah.
So they looked at, they actually, this article did some really good price comparisons. You want to know how much it actually costs right now using their outdated MD-80s?
Yes.
To fly from DFW to New York LaGuardia, which is 1,400 miles. It costs $8,668 in fuel. And if they were using the more efficient 737, it would cost $6,300. So That's how much more it is. And that cost is passed on to passengers. That's one of the reasons that prices have gone up.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting that they're facing a real dilemma about how long do they wait before they buy. They're discouraged by the timing of the next generation narrow-body airplane. So they're thinking they have to buy more replacements before they can get to the next generation.
Well, maybe Southwest has got a good deal on some 737s.
Yeah, with some cracks. Patched up with cock.
Little cock. What do you need? Cock can fix anything.
Duct tape. And they're ready to go.
If you get into one of the Southwest planes, Gretchen, on your way to San Antonio, and it's got cock on the side, you know, just...
Maybe it was one of the ones that's been fine.
Maybe you don't want it. Maybe you want to take the next flight. Oh, boy. Well, I got something
okay.
from Men's Health about the 20 worst foods that you can buy.
Oh.
And there's too many to talk about here, so let me just go in the worst ones.
Yeah, what are the worst
ones? Number one,
that
worst...
That you can buy at the grocery store or
well, really,
prepared?
Buy out, I think. Mm. Well, it's a combination. They have different categories.
Okay.
First one is just the worst food, period, in America that you can buy, and it is the Outback Steakhouse Aussie cheese fries with ranch dressing. It's a whopping 2,900 calories, 182 grams of fat, 240 grams of carbs. Even if you split these starters with three friends, you'll have downed to dinners with the calories before the entree arrives.
Well, let me see if the other one that I know is really high. Cheesecake Factory cheesecake. One piece of cheesecake has like 2,400 calories.
Does it really?
It's unbelievable. That's why it's so decadent.
Well, the worst dessert here is Chili's chocolate chip paradise pie with vanilla ice. It's 1,600 calories, they say.
Hmm.
The worst breakfast is Bob Evans caramel banana pecan cream stacked and stuffed hotcakes at 1,540. The worst steak is Lone Star 20-ounce T-bone. The worst burger is Carl Jr.'s double $6 burger.
Wow, that's a big thing, yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah, Carl's? It's huge. Carl's Jr.
I've never been there.
They're big out west.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The double $6, but sounds yummy.
Isn't that the one that Paris Hilton did the commercial for?
Oh,
when she
is
was
that?
Leaning over the car with the big burger.
Yeah.
It looks like that. It's something big and gooey like that.
So if I eat one, I can get a girl like Paris Hilton?
There you go. That's exactly what that means.
That's what I thought. The worst salad is On the Border's Grande Taco Salad filled with taco beef. Oh, I'm just getting a salad. 1,450 calories. The worst sandwich is Quiznos Classic Italian, the large one, at 1,528 calories.
Wow.
The worst nachos on the border.
Wow.
Stacked border nachos. 2,740 calories. 2,740. Oh, my God.
Wow.
The worst pasta. This is interesting. Macaroni grill, spaghetti, and meatballs with meat sauce. Isn't that something?
That is
something. That seems
something.
So innocuous.
It does.
2,430 calories.
Must be the size of the
128
portion.
Grams of fat, 207 grams of carbs.
Wow.
6,290 milligrams of sodium.
Sodium?
Wow. The worst pizza is Uno's Chicago Grill, Chicago Classic Deep Dish. Worst fish entry is On the Border, Dos X's Fish Tacos with Rice. See, I sometimes will order fish tacos because I love them.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think they're going to be a little healthier.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's just those. I mean, On the Border seems to be coming up pretty frequently.
Yeah, yeah. Worst chicken entree, Chili's is the second Chili's entree. Chili's honey chipotle crispers with chipotle sauce. That sounds yummy. Worst Chinese entree, P.F. Chang's pork lo mein.
Wow.
1,820 calories.
Wow.
And let's see, a couple more here. The worst breakfast. No, I got the worst breakfast. You know, next time I have to come into this show and type, staple my papers together because I lose all. Oh, the worst starter is Chili's again, the Awesome Blossom, 2,710 calories.
How you can take a lowly onion, right?
Yes.
And make it an onion that probably has like 10 calories when you start with it. Right, you can probably eat the whole onion and lose weight.
And you end with something with 2,710 calories and really no redeeming grams of anything. except the underlying onion. It's probably
which is totally decimated by all the crap that's put on top of it. The fries, the fryer that it's dunked in.
That's pretty funny.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, I got another survey that I found very interesting.
Okay.
Do you know, this is in USA Today, Americans freely change their religions. You know, we're such a religious country and everything.
Isn't that interesting?
But we always change.
Like the one you're born with isn't really the one you stick with when you're an adult, right?
Right. A new map of faith in the USA shows a nation constantly shifting amid religious choices, unaware or unconcerned with doctrinal distinctions. Unbelief is on the rise, and immigration is introducing new faces. Let me see here. Based on interviews with 35,000 adults, it's a lot in the continental United States, it shows so much diversity and dynamicism that a co-author sums it up simply, chum, chum, chum. The biggest news here is change. Religion won't matter in the future, but it'll matter in new and less predictable ways, says one of the authors of the studies.
Hmm.
The key finding is basically faith is a fluid 44% say they're no longer tied to the religious or secular upbringing of their childhood. They've changed religions or denominations, adopting a faith for the first time or abandoning an affiliation altogether. So anyway, that's pretty interesting. I'll bet that it would be interesting to see if they had that number over time,
mm-hmm.
you know, because mm-hmm. I'll bet a couple of generations ago, you pretty much stuck with the religion you were born
right.
with.
I bet that's true, too.
But now people
are a lot of pressure.
More exposed.
Family
and,
pressure.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway, I just found that little snippet kind of interesting. And little things like that do change the whole fabric of our society.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you want to hear something that's sort of controversial that might be in the news that maybe you heard about?
I do.
But you might be hearing more about it because it's all going to boil down to what Congress is doing about jobs in the United States and national security, which, you know, are the hot buzzwords. Did you hear this past week that the Boeing company lost a huge contract with the Air Force to build military refueling planes? It's a $35 to $40 billion contract. Boeing lost the contract, but you know who they lost it to. That's where the surprise is. They lost it to a Paris-based company called European Aeronautic Defense and Space Company, which is currently being sanctioned by the World Trade Organization for trade violations. And they don't necessarily like the United States, this EADS company, but they have just won this huge bid to make these aircraft refueling planes, which Boeing has always had the contract and they've always made them. And so Boeing is crying foul, but what's really causing this huge uproar is that Congress people are saying that the U.S. Defense Department is now outsourcing jobs, very valuable American jobs, to other countries, and they're taking, you know, jobs away from Americans, and the security of our country is now moving overseas.
Wow.
So if the U.S. Defense Department can do it, what's to stop, you know, the next, remember the whole thing about port security
exactly.
was being farmed out to somebody too, and
right.
there was a big
a Middle Eastern
file
country
there,
for
and Middle
a while.
Eastern country, right. Right. So it actually, the contract was won by LA-based Northrop Grumman and its Paris partner, EAD. Northrop provided the best value to the government, says an Air Force spokesperson. However, this is going to open up the U.S. market in a huge way because there's going to be two more contracts that are coming, and now this European company is going to have a foot in the door and will actually be in the lead to get the next two contracts.
Wow.
So what's really significant about it is that it's a flashpoint because of the use of foreign contractors. Boeing was painting this as a competition between Americans and European rivals. They're also saying that the European company gets tons and tons of subsidies. And so it really was an apples to apples comparison is the other thing that senators have criticized.
Right.
This is what the senator from Kansas, who's going to lose a whole bunch of jobs, said. Why would the Defense Department take 19,000 jobs overseas? where France, Germany, Spain, and the United Kingdom are going to game the jobs. Why did they not account for extensive foreign government subsidies that make the EADS plane more efficient? And why were the rules biased against the domestic supplier? And they want a thorough review. So Boeing has actually cried foul, and they've said that they want a review. They're protesting the contract. But what's really remarkable about it is Northrop, it says that 60% of this whole thing is going to be built in the United States. A whole bunch of jobs are going to go to Mobile, Alabama. And that it's going to use General Electric engines that are built in North Carolina and Ohio. And so it's going to produce 2,000 new jobs in Boeing and 25,000 more support jobs at suppliers nationwide. But now the two companies are going to square off. It's probably going to go to Congress.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's 179 tankers that are going to be purchased here. And Boeing has suppliers in 40 states, and Northrop has suppliers in 49 states.
Really?
Yeah. So, and Boeing is saying that theirs is completely American-made, and the actual facts is 85% of it is made in the U.S. So it's 85% versus 60%. But what has been really interesting about this is the coverage on the various TV shows about it. It's just been so one-sided. It's been so, God, they're taking American jobs overseas, and how did Boeing not win this, and why did it go to a foreign company? Well, actually, none of that is true. It's not really a foreign company.
Right.
It's not really, if you'd really delve down and look at it, it's very, very one-sided. And even Nancy Pelosi has said, oh, you can't give all these jobs away. So I think it's going to continue to spark an outrage, but I just think the reporting of it has been very one-sided and very unfortunate. But
I think reporting is always going to tend to go for one or two lines that solicits some emotional response.
Yeah, it's sensationalism, and yeah. It never should have been.
And there's some of these issues. Yeah, there's some of these issues that are facts that need smart people to just kind of figure out what the best way to go forward and leave the politics at the door.
We're going to spend another year and more money evaluating this contract, whether it was valid or not.
Right.
So how much more money is thrown at this? They already made a decision, you know?
Right.
And several years ago, Boeing was involved in a scandal with the Air Force. And they're saying, oh, well, this didn't have anything to do with Boeing's scandal a couple years ago. But nonetheless, really, should they be protesting?
I know.
There was a procurement scandal in 2003 that sent a top Air Force acquisition official to prison for conflicts of interest. And that led to the collapse of an earlier tanker contract with Boeing. I mean, good gracious. They've got a pretty bad track record here.
Yeah,
and
no
now
kidding.
they're completely complaining that this was not fair. Well, it sounds like sour grapes a bit to me the Air Force said that what actually won here gives you more of everything, more passengers, more cargo, more fuel. We can carry more patients. There's more availability. It's more flexible. This is the best plane for the Air Force, and that's what we were out there to find. So, I don't know. It's just interesting coming from the reporting side to see this.
Yeah.
See this happen. So. I guess there's three sides to every story. That's
three sides.
Three sides. There's one side, the other side, and facts somewhere, the truth somewhere
and
in the middle, which we're not 100% sure we'll ever know.
Right.
So.
Wow. Well,
so that's it.
I've got one last thing.
Okay.
The final four. March Madness is upon us. It's just starting.
March Madness. Yes.
And I have some advice.
Okay.
A lot of people are doing this, so. If
your office pool at work?
Well, that's not the advice, but because I don't really keep up. I don't know who's even favored.
Okay.
Except probably my alma mater, Illinois. Probably
yeah,
not.
Yeah, probably not. I have a feeling that's not that.
No. But what they're saying is, and a lot of people have done this, there's data to show this, that if you're a guy that's going to sit home and watch the games anyway, mm-hmm. get your vasectomy. It takes about 2 to 4 days to get a vasectomy, uh-huh. and to recover from a vasectomy, and you're going to be sitting your butt in front of the TV watching basketball all 4 days anyway. So it said there's this one Oregon Urology Institute. They are completely booked on the two Wednesdays before the two major weekends for vasectomies. And there's a sports radio station in Oregon that's promoting The clinic's ads to send each patient a recovery of sports magazines, free pizza delivery, and a bag of frozen peas. And you know what the frozen peas are for?
I'm swelling, I guess.
Yeah. Apparently, peas are very useful in keeping down swelling because they're so small that they can form lots of different shapes and just form things around. So there you go, guys.
With your pizza and your peas.
With your pizza and your peas and your sports magazines and your vasectomy, could be a hog heaven for you.
That's unbelievable. I wonder if there's any statistics that say that vasectomies go up right before March Madness.
This institute is hazing it, but again, I think they've been out there kind of promoting it, saying, hey, why not?
Why not?
You're going to be sitting around the house anyway.
That's great.
So I thought that was pretty funny.
Ending on a sex story there.
And now, yeah, I should have put that in the sex section. I don't know why the people are going to have vasectomies when they're just obese and not going to have sex anyway. What's the point of it? No reason to shoot blanks if you're not shooting anything.
Save the money.
Save the money. Sounds like an excuse. Oh, honey, I can't go help you with this. I'm recovering from my vasectomy, so I guess I'll watch the games.
Or go out to Outback and get a Bloomin' Onion or whatever the hell's on the list. 3,000 calories. Who's counting?
Yeah, really. All right, then we will see our audience. We'll hear our audience.
So, not if we're the new governor of New York.
No, we won't. We won't see anything. But have a good St. Patty's Day coming up. And we'll talk at you soon.
All right.
We'll try not to be 2 months next time. Bye.
Bye.